By the time the law for the prevention of genetically diseased offspring came into force on January 1st, 1934, all the patients in Egelfinghaar State Hospital for the mentally ill have been registered in accordance with the provisions of this law. The staff at Egelfinghaar begin a genetic biological inventory of the entire population. So-called kin charts of relatives of patients are drawn up. From 1934 to 1943, at least 1,703 forced sterilizations are performed at Egelfinghaar, involving 742 female and 961 male patients from Upper Bavarian hospitals for the mentally ill. From November 17, 1939, in a period of 3 weeks, the director of the Upper Bavarian State Hospital for the Mentally Ill at Egelfinghaar, Dr. Hermann Pfannmüller, processes more than 2,000 registration forms in addition to performing his regular medical work. The registration forms are sent to the Reich Committee, which decides who is to be killed. At Egelfinghaar, there is one of the so-called special children's sections, where children are taken to be murdered. In the special children's sections, a euphemism for killing wards, lethal doses of luminal or morphine scopolamine are administered. Later, children are also murdered in the gas chambers of the T4 killing centres. From 1940 to May 1945, 332 children are killed in Egelfinghaar by administering drugs or by starvation.
I wish the directorate to inform me concerning the state of health of my child Maria, age 3, because the child was taken from us without a word of explanation. I, the child's mother, have not been permitted to see my child for 6 months. I went to the hospital at Wiesloch on Lord's Ascension Day, but I wasn't allowed to see her. Why, I don't know. Is it right to deny that to a mother? Please write or have a nurse write to me, telling me how my child is and why she was taken away so suddenly, without her parents being allowed to see her again.
On August 11th, 41, the starved child was murdered by administering luminal.
In 1939, rumors circulated that sick children were somehow to be disposed of. I realized at once that there were plans afoot to do something to which I could not agree, and I immediately phoned the municipal youth welfare office to protest against the proposed transfer of our child. I said that conditions at Haar Hospital had long disturbed me and that for a while I'd been contemplating moving the child. At all events, I said, I would not tolerate anything being done with her without my consent. I was granted permission to move her to another clinic. She was to stay in Haar until I found something suitable. On March 23, 1939, we took our daughter to the Catholic Sanatorium at Schönbrunn. Schönbrunn is the biggest sanatorium for the mentally handicapped in the Archbishopric of Munich. It is situated a half hour's walking distance from Röhrmoos station on the Munich-Ingolstadt line in a fertile wooded region with healthy air. Together with our two healthy children, we frequently went to Schönbrunn and spent the day with our daughter in the sanatorium grounds. But in December 1940, news of deaths and of children being transferred from Schönbrunn went around. I was determined to rescue my child from murder, and on the night of December 15th, I fetched her home. But the apartment was small, the girl was unused to it now, and there was a neighboring apartment block, so I couldn't keep her at home for longer than 3 days. I returned her to Schönbrunn with very mixed feelings. People from old people's homes in Munich were being brought to Schönbrunn because the German armed forces had taken over the homes. In June 1944, we were informed as follows. We hereby notify you that your daughter was also transferred today to the state hospital at Egelfing. The transfer was ordered because a regular hospital is being set up at Schönbrunn. Together with 46 other children, our daughter had to leave Schönbrunn on June 2, 1944.
It was usual for every fosterling taken from Schönbrunn in the Third Reich to receive confession and Holy Communion. Those who were in physically poorer shape also received the last rites.
The children's home at Egelfing Haar already had a bad name among those who were in the know, and there was dark talk that no one left there alive. We knew that too. I once went there to visit my daughter, and I was horrified by her emaciated condition. I expressed my indignation to the nurse, who reassured me, or rather tried to reassure me, that the children all got plenty to eat and that her emaciation was a result of her illness. I pretended to believe her, but instructed my wife to take food to the child in Haar twice a week. But her weight decreased with each visit, and rashes appeared on her face. We discussed these things with the doctor.
As an asylum director who is confessionally independent and a confirmed National Socialist, I consider myself bound to present a genuine economy measure that is capable of positively influencing the situation of the asylums. I consider it appropriate here to point out in all frankness and clarity the necessity for us doctors to draw the final consequence, i.e. extermination, pertaining to the medical care of life unworthy life.
Telegram from Egelfing Haar, December 21st, 1944. We hereby inform you that your daughter has contracted pneumonia as the result of a cold. The child's condition is critical. Heil Hitler. Signed, Dr. Pfannmüller. Telegram from Egelfing Haar, December 24th, 1944. Daughter deceased. We funeral call 41331 Egelfing.
On August 30th, 1940, the Reich Minister of the Interior passed a decree ordering Jews to be accommodated in one institution. By way of enforcement of this decree, I hereby order that all Jews be moved to the State Hospital for the Mentally Ill, Egelfing Haar, just outside Munich, on September 14, 1940. This measure applies only to full Jews of German and Polish nationality and full Jews who are stateless.
76 women and 82 men, including a 10-year-old boy, are involved. They are filmed by Tobis Filmkunst Movie Company at the State Hospital for the Mentally Ill, Egelfing Haar. On September 20th, 1940, they are deported to the killing center at Brandenburg to be gassed. The bills for the deceased Jewish patients are sent from a pseudo-address. Solms Civil Registry Office, Post, Lublin.
Their transfer is not only legal in order, but was also justified, in my view, since the Aryan patients and Aryan nursing staff repeatedly refused to be present and treated in the same ward as Jewish patients.
Following your friendly advice at my last visit, I have again written to the Ministry of the Interior in Berlin, but have unfortunately received no reply. I have written four times to the Chelm Hospital near Lublin with the same negative result. Two other Polish hospitals, on the other hand, have informed me that my daughter is not there. Where can I continue to look for her? You were so friendly to have someone write to me in the fall, informing me that my inquiry to the transport company had been forwarded. Am I being immodest in asking you now to send me their address? Perhaps I will be lucky if I write to them again. Dear Director, please, if it's possible, write me a few words to free me from this agonizing uncertainty. Thank you in advance for your kind reply. Yours most humbly.
Ha, June 1941. Dear Mother, because I must leave here and don't know where I'm to be taken, I want to write you some final lines. It is hard for me. To everyone, thank you very much indeed and goodbye till we see each other again. If not in this world, then hopefully in heaven. With heartfelt greetings, your grateful son.
Dear Father, we have been stamped. We have been told we'll be leaving here tomorrow. We'll be gassed or killed in some other way. We know that God doesn't want it to happen, but He permits it, because He has given man free will.
In January 1940, 25 men and 22 women are led into the grey buses of the Gemeinnütziger Krankentransport GmbH and driven to Grafenegg, where they are killed using carbon monoxide gas. The patients from Egelfing Ha are the first victims of euthanasia. Further transports of 47 and 70 patients take place. From August 30th, 1940, to January 17th, 1941, more than one-third of all patients at Egelfing Ha are taken away and killed. Their number matches that recorded on the report sheet sent to the Reich Cooperative for State Hospitals and Nursing Homes. They are all sent to the killing center at Hartheim near Linz on the Danube. Panmüller's wish to have his own crematorium at Egelfing Ha is turned down as being too close to Munich. On November 1, 1943, on the initiative of the director, a low-fat special diet is introduced for some patients. They are compelled to live in separate parts of the hospital, the so-called hunger houses, number 22 and number 25. The director strictly supervises the preparation of food and regularly checks patients' weight tables. Pfannmüller occasionally orders strong sleeping draughts to be administered to accelerate death. From January 1943 to June 1945, 429 people died in the hunger houses at Egelfing Ha. We give them fat and protein-free food and they go of their own accord. Circular from the Bavarian State Ministry of the Interior. Subject: relocation of patients from hospitals and nursing homes. Transport is to be provided for by the relocating hospital. If the hospital has no immediate rail connection, it is to transport the sick to the nearest railroad station. Agitated patients are to be appropriately prepared for a journey of several hours. The patients are to be dressed in their own clothes and underwear. All private property is to be packed neatly and handed over. Nursing files and medical histories are to be given to the transport administrator. Should relatives inquire at the hospital of origin, they are to be told that the patient has been relocated by order of the Reich Defense Commissar and that the new hospital will contact relatives at the earliest opportunity.
Relatives tried to have their family members released. Others said, "Help us, sister." Everyone who came was afraid. When someone new was admitted, the family asked, "But they are not killed here, are they, sister?" For a while there were no new admissions. "People are scared," we said. "They are not admitting people anymore." You grew so close to the patients. You got to like them. We cried. Some had come when they were young. Martha, it was hard losing her. She was distraught. Let me stay, she wailed. It was so sad. I can still see her standing round the bus, crying. It was awful. And Therese, she'd realized and screamed, if I die, then I hope you all go to hell.
Dear Directorate, I wanted to visit my son and received a telegram saying he'd been relocated to the Old Kingdom. Where is this Old Kingdom? I want to visit him. Moreover, if my son has died already, I want his ashes. In Munich, all sorts of rumors are going round. I want to know the truth.
Good. So it was all carried out according to a plan. Couldn't time have been found to inform the husband once the plan was known? Linz wrote saying, no visits, send no packages, because a patient will already be in another hospital. But forwarding a package from there really wouldn't have been too much to ask either. Then the news from Brandenburg, seizure, death, immediate cremation. There wasn't even time to inform the next of kin who wanted to see his wife one last time. Thus, it was inconsiderate of you not to inform me of my wife's being moved to Linz. I could have said goodbye to her. I would also like to have the address of the woman in charge of the transport to Linz, as I wish to know what her last impressions of my wife were.
We discovered these files in a temporary archive in Berlin in 1993. They are the final remaining testimony to a group of NS victims forgotten by the broader public and also not always gladly remembered by their relatives. And when one lays the files aside, it's a really difficult feeling, because forgetting the extermination is part of the extermination itself –